Welcome to the final episode of Series 11 of York Hospital Ball with Manny Duku. This series has gone through the decades and now we get an insight into last season at York City with Manny, who joined the club in the summer of 2022 after playing football for various clubs in Holland, Scotland and England. This episode is once again sponsored by the Nearly Departed app for iPhone. If you travel by train, you need Nearly Departed. Whether you're traveling to work or to an away game, Nearly Departed will help you get there by showing live updates for your train service. The app has been carefully made by a York City supporter and is available for free in the Apple App Store. So download Nearly Departed today, ready for when you next travel by train. But for now, for the final time this series, enjoy Hospital Ball with Manny Duku.
So thanks for joining us, Manny. I'm trying to cover lots of different York City eras, and I thought your insight into last season would be well worth listening to, given it was so eventful. But first of all, I just wanted to kind of touch upon your kind of life growing up in Holland, and I wondered what team it was that you supported growing up.
Obviously, being a young kid born in Amsterdam, the obvious club to support is Ajax. And growing up, obviously, all the boys from Amsterdam, everyone wanted to play for Ajax. Because in Holland and in Amsterdam, where I'm from, Ajax was like the only professional club, not just like big club, but only professional club in the city. So Ajax was everything we dreamt of. Ajax was everything we saw. But basically, from where I lived, you could see the stadium. So for me, yeah, like Ajax was the dream.
And I read that you were quite close to joining Heerenveen, a well-established club in the Netherlands, but there was some false information being spread about you sort of damaging your reputation. It didn't quite work out. That must have been quite a crazy time and must be a massive regret, I imagine.
Yeah, it was, because obviously as a kid playing football, you dream to become a professional, and then something like that happens. And that was actually also something that, as you were saying, is damaging. But also, like, for me, it created depression, and I basically gave up on the game because I felt like you work so hard and now you finally get an opportunity to achieve your dreams, and then something like that happens. And as a young boy, you know, it doesn't take much. If your dreams get shattered, it's all about heartbreaks and trying to recover. When you're a bit older, you know how to get over stuff like that. But when you're younger and it happens for the first time, it's a bit heartbreaking.
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah. And so how did you end up coming across to England then in search of your sort of dream of having a career in football?
Yeah, so like I said, when I was around 18, when that happened, I kind of I didn't stop totally, but I was like playing lower leagues with friends, like Sunday league, you'd call it here in England. So when I was 22-ish, yeah, my mom said, because she saw like the way I was just messing about with football, and I had an uncle here who was like, let's give him a try here in England, because obviously, in Holland, you can see he's lost all the love for the game. And maybe when he comes over, he will, revive his love for the game again. And obviously, as I said, in Amsterdam, there's only one big club in the city. But if you look at London, there's like many more clubs, professional teams. And so that's why my uncle said, look, in England, there's a lot of clubs, a lot of opportunities. So let's just give him a chance and get him over here and see what happens. So that's how I came to England.
That involved you kind of just writing to clubs and asking for trials and stuff like that. Did you have to get an agent or what was the process?
Yeah, so when I came, was just me writing to clubs. Obviously, no knowledge, didn't know any really how it worked. So me writing to teams, didn't matter what level it was, just looking around the area. When I came from Holland, I moved to Aylesbury. So my uncle lived in Aylesbury. So I was looking at that area, Oxford, obviously Watford, Hemel Hempstead. Yeah, those kind of areas around that. It's not too far to travel and it's manageable to get there and get back home. So yeah, that was what I really did.
Yeah, I imagine that's quite daunting, really, at times, just sort of coming over to another country and just writing to these clubs and hoping that something happens. It must have been quite character building as well, I'd imagine.
Definitely. As you know, I wasn't already the strongest person of what just happened previously and not really believing in football as much anymore. So for me to do that was really my mom really doing that extra backing that I needed, because if it was for me myself, I don't think I would have or could have done it, because I was like comfortable in Holland. I was studying. I was just focusing on other stuff. So when I came here, it was like, it was hard, but my mom really gave me that 90% I needed to add on my 10%.
You mentioned there sort of falling out of love with football, but I imagine you sort of fell back in love with it at Hayes and Yedin. I mean, you'd moved around a few clubs, but found a real home there, and you scored incredible 39 goals in 50 appearances. Was it that place that you just found a home and it clicked for you?
Yeah, it was like, obviously also like having a manager who believes in you, that plays you week in, week out, and that you know that the person is there for you as well. And being there, obviously seeing a few, I was by the time I was here a year or two. So I've seen a bit, I've learned, I've taken, and I had got the encouragement again in myself, that I believed in myself, and obviously confidence when you start getting goals and all of that really helped.
And understandably, clubs are interested in you after that season, and Cheltenham gave you a chance in the Football League. Were there other clubs interested in you, or was it kind of, were Cheltenham the kind of main team that were after you?
Yeah, there were quite a few teams who wanted me as well, but Cheltenham just worked the fastest. So for me, it was a no-brainer. Whoever wanted me at the time and whoever wanted my make my dream come true again to become a professional footballer, yeah, that would be a no-brainer. I wasn't looking to wait for another bigger team or another this. I was just, and obviously I believed in Gary Johnson at the time who was there, that he would help me move forwards as well, as he's done with other players.
Yeah, was it a difficult decision to leave Hayes and Yedin for that first time? Because like I say, you'd sort of rekindled your love in football there, hadn't you?
Yeah, obviously you think about it because you love playing and I had the joy again, like my childhood joy. But then obviously it's also a dream come true. So it's like you don't even think twice. Obviously, you love the place, you love the club, but also it's like a dream coming true. And it's football. You never know if the opportunity will come again.
That's right, yeah. And did you feel like you had enough chances at Cheltenham or have any regrets at your time there? So I noticed you were kind of in and out. I know you scored for them, but you were kind of put out on loan at a few clubs. And did you feel like you got a fair crack of a whip there?
Personally, I don't think so. But obviously, a lot of things happened in the club. When I got there, obviously, I got my chances. I got injured, came back from injury, scored, and then the manager who brought me in got sacked. So then new manager comes in, and then obviously, then whatever happens, happens. So, and I don't have any grudges or anything. It's part of football. They turn you into the man you are. And I've learned a lot from all the steps I've made, and they have made things possible that I wouldn't have been able to if I was there. Maybe New York would have never happened, and then this Zoom call would have never happened. So yeah, for me personally, obviously, looking back, I felt like I deserved a bit more of a chance, but it's football. Sometimes you're on the good side of things, sometimes you're on the other side of things.
And one of the loan moves that you had was at Barnet, and I watched this crazy game that you'd played in at Hartlepool United. You scored two goals in 54 seconds, and it was, I think it was live on TNT Sports at the time, or BT Sports as it probably was back then. I mean, that must have been crazy to score twice in less than a minute.
Yeah, that game was actually a very crazy game. Obviously, since I've been in England, that was also the first time we were playing live on TV as well. So yeah, it was an unbelievable game. Scored twice in like a minute, and then I went off injured in the 30th minute as well. So it was a crazy game. Sadly enough, I couldn't finish off the game, but yeah, it's also part of memories and things that no one can take away from you.
And the next sort of, you then went north of the border, didn't you, to play in Scotland with Raith Rovers and then later on for Inverness. Looking at that timeline, I imagine a lot of that will have been in COVID times as well. How was it for you playing in COVID? I imagine it's different for every player, but were you missing the crowd? What was it like having no supporters in the grounds?
Yeah, it was crazy because for me, it was my first time in Scotland, so I don't know how the crowds really are in Scotland. But I remember that we played Hearts like, I think, 3 or 4 times. So, and I know Hearts away is quite a hectic crowd. So obviously, I would have loved to have the crowds there. And even at Raith, we were doing very well as well, especially in the first half of the season. Personally, I was having a very good, and we went to the playoff semifinals. So yeah, the crowd would have been amazing. And then the second year in Venice, the crowds were kind of, you had the restrictions, but they were slowly coming in, so you can sense a bit of it. But I didn't really have the full experience of the crowds in Scotland.
Yeah. You mentioned Hearts there. It was a really one of your best goals, I think, for Raith was away at Hearts, wasn't it, at Tynecastle, where you left
yeah.
Shot into the top corner. I think that was a televised match as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a televised match as well. So As you can see, televised matches are really my things.
Yeah, need to put you on the TV every week.
Every week, yeah.
I mean, let's get on to the good stuff. You signed for York City in the summer of 2022. How did York City become interested in you? And was it kind of from the previous season? Was it division dependent on what York were going to be in that you were going to sign?
Yeah, so me and John had a chat in January before the summer, I actually signed to come in the promotion year. But at that time, it was a bit complicated with my life stuff and a lot of things going on. So obviously, I decided to go Havant and Waterlooville because of this timing and the situation and obviously how life was going. I wanted to get back home to my family and stuff because I just felt like that was the right decision at the time. And then in the summer, obviously the season, they went up and me and John got back in contact again. So yeah, it was more of we had a chat. I went back home, had a good think, and then yeah, we made something happen.
And that must have been quite positive for you, knowing that the managers still wanted you, so you couldn't move for him in January, but then for him to come back in for you in the summer, does that give you a bit of belief that this manager really wants you and wants you as part of his squad?
Yeah, for sure, because as I said, in football there's not many second chances you have, but obviously John wanted me in the National League North and he still wanted me even though he went up as well. So that was a sign of encouragement as well.
Yeah, there must have been a real sort of good feel-good factor around the club when you joined as well, having just won promotion. And I wondered what was the aim for that team at that time? Was John saying to the players, look, we want to try push again and get promoted again? Or was it a season of consolidation? What was he saying to the players?
No, I think obviously, as you know, John has achieved a lot in football as well. So for any manager would say we want to push on, but obviously John knows the league. John knows how to win this league or go up. So we were all really encouraged to keep going and push on because I felt like we had the squad and you saw how we started as well. And even if you look overall the season against the top teams, we've done very well. And only the teams that were a little bit below on the table, that was a bit the struggle. And that was part of inconsistency. But as I was saying, like, yeah, John had the belief, the group really believed in him as well as a manager.
And you had to wait a little bit of time for your first goal, but when it did come, it was a great one for you to score deep into injury time, the winner against Bromley, right in front of the home fans as well, in front of that south stand. I imagine there's no better feeling as a striker to score in the last minute, in the dying, you know, minutes of the game in front of your home fans.
Yeah, definitely, because even that was my first league game at home as well. So obviously the first few league games, I don't know if it was one or two, I wasn't involved. So that was my first involvement at home as well. So that was actually my official home debut, not like the friendly doesn't really, yeah, but my official league home debut. So that was amazing. And then scoring the winner, it makes it even better, as you know. Scoring in general is great, but scoring the winner last minute at home in front of the south stand was unbelievable. So that was, yeah, there was no better feeling.
And it was a great header as well, wasn't it? And I was looking back at the goal last night that Ollie Dyson dug out a really great cross. Was it one of those that as soon as it kind of left his foot, you sort of thought, I'm getting on the end of this and, you know, I can score here?
Yeah, because it was like you'd say 50-50, but for me personally, if a ball is like that, I feel like it's 75 for me. It's only up to me to lose it because most of the time I feel like the attacker has the advantage anyway, but me being aerial strength I have, like, I feel like that's definitely a chance I should be score or at least winning the header. And then obviously if you score it, that's even better.
Yeah. And was it a relief to get off the mark? Because imagine as a striker, whenever you sign for a new club, you're looking to get off and running at you as quick as possible. Was it a relief, or what was your feelings when that ball hit the back of the net?
Yeah, obviously it was a relief and it was a win as well. So, you know, as an attacker, not every goal feels the same. And that really felt like different. And obviously the crowd, you become different to the crowd as well. And the supporters see you different. Because if you score a last-minute winner or you're losing 5-0 and you score last-minute 5-1, then that there's a difference. And then also, like, you feel like the next game will come and you score again and things will start rolling. So yeah, it was really a big change inside me as well.
Well, let's talk about one of your other goals as well that came at Shrewsbury away in the FA Cup. I wondered, as someone who grew up in the Netherlands, how much did you know about the FA Cup? Because it's quite a famous competition around the world, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously it's quite famous, but because I've been in England for so long, so I know how the FA Cup is and how things can, because I remember the first or the second year when I was here, that was when I haven't had a big run and Lincoln had a big run as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lincoln beat like two Premier League teams to get to the last somewhere. So I knew that there's a lot of opportunities for clubs to do well in the FA Cup.
And unfortunately, you conceded a penalty, didn't you, at Shrewsbury? And trying to help back, I think, and then scored your great header a few moments later. Was that, again, a bit of a relief because you'd have been going into the dressing room and maybe John might have ticked you off for conceding the penalty, but then obviously because you've got us back into the game, you've kind of redeemed yourself.
Yeah, definitely, because if you go into halftime 1-0, 2-0, especially against a team that's a few leagues above, 1-0 is hard enough, but 2-0 makes things much harder. So obviously after the pen and then scoring, that really gave me some breathing air in the changing room. Otherwise, John would have ripped my head off.
What was John like in the dressing room? Because like you mentioned, we got off to a good start and then went on off the boil a little bit. Probably not so much, you know, still a massive shock when he got sacked. But what was he like as a manager in the dressing room?
Very involved, but also a very calm, collective person. The John you see in the interviews, that's actually also the John I personally know. Like, he's a very calm gentleman, and he really, when he speaks, everyone listens and everyone understands what he's saying. So yeah, that's John, really.
And was it it must have been a shock to you as players then when he was sacked? Did you have any inkling that it was on the cards, or was it completely out of the blue?
As a group, it was, I think, out of the blue, because obviously the manager, he got obviously York promoted the year before, and it wasn't like we were bottom table with 0 points. So it was like a shock to everyone. And deep down, we knew if we went on a run of 5 games and you win them, you might be back up there again. So yeah, it was a shock for everyone. But for me personally, because I know how football is, nothing is a shock. Anything can happen in football.
Yeah. I wondered, what is it like for you as someone who, you know, you were starting some games and you'd be out the team. So when a new manager comes in, is that just a chance for you to prove yourself then? Does that give you an extra sort of 10% in training when a new manager comes in?
Yeah, for me personally, I'll always work hard anyway, but it's just up to the new manager to see if he favours you or if he doesn't. Because sometimes, you know, football, everyone has their opinions. Some managers will like you and some managers will not like you. So in football, it's just, he comes in and you do what you do. You do it at the best of your abilities, and you, if you get the opportunity, make sure you're ready.
Yeah, I think one of the first games after John was sacked was the Wrexham home game, which is probably what you're best remembered for, I think, by York fans, when you scored with your first touch after 24 seconds of coming on. I just wonder, what did Mikey say to you when you came on that late on in the game? Was it literally, you know, try to get us back in?
Mikey wasn't the manager at that time. We had Tim was the
interim. Oh, yes, sorry, yes. Costa,
yeah, so obviously you. Tim took over. And then we played, so he did 3 games. And obviously the 3 games he did, I scored twice in those 3 games because we played Wolverhampton at home. I scored a header as well. And then I came off a half-time injured. And then we had Dorking away. We lost that one 1-0. And then obviously we had the Wrexham at home on TV again.
Yeah, we're seeing a theme here.
Oh, yeah, on TV again. So obviously, yeah, we were drawing. Obviously, I was disappointed that I didn't start because I felt like even the games I did play, I did well. The one before the Dorking, I scored as well. So I felt like, obviously, managers make decisions, as we all say. So we were drawing, and then obviously they scored the 1-0 late as well, I think in the 89th minute or something, very late, because
yeah, was,
I came
yeah.
shortly after that. So they scored very late. So then obviously he felt like now we have to chase it. So he didn't really say much. I was just there. He said, he had to make a change because obviously he wants to get a result. So he just called me and I just came on, and the first touch, the first kick, everything was first, because I think it was a goal kick, if I'm not mistaken. It get kicked long. Max flicks it on to Lenny. Lenny takes a touch. He passes it to me, and yeah, and then I scored.
What made you hit it first time and not sort of take a couple of touches first? Because you were at a bit of an angle as well, weren't you? It's interesting watching it back, because when you watch it back, the sun is sort of blasting, isn't it, on there, on that side of the pitch. You, even watching it on TV, you can't really see what happened. It was only when you see the replay of how you've sort of hit it first time and how it's flown into the top corner. What made you hit it first time?
Actually, I was trying to run in behind, but Lenny, because he took a touch, I dropped back. But when he passed it, I saw the defender coming, and I know the defender, because I know, obviously, we watch videos, and because I know he's fast as well. So to take a touch, he might get there. But if I shoot it first time, he might not get there. and he nearly got there as well, as you can see, because he had a little deflection. So if I took a touch, he might have blocked me. So I thought, nah, I'm just shooting, because I came on late as well. You don't know how many chances you'll get. You'd be lucky even to get one. So I was like, the first chance I get, I'm not even taking a touch. It doesn't matter where I am on the pitch, I'm shooting it straight away. And obviously it came so quick that in the game when I came on. So yeah, that was, yeah, it was a great feeling. Obviously, again, at home, I mean, it would have been even better in the South Stand, but if it was towards the South Stand, because then that would have been the whole stadium obviously buzzing in my face. But a great result again. And yeah, that was really good as well.
And your celebration, I think you just stood there. It was almost like was that your frustration not starting the game, and almost like that you've proven the point? I didn't know what, you know, from the other goals that you've scored, you've been off and sort of towards the fans, but that one in particular, you just kind of stood there and waited, and everyone's kind of piled on you.
Yeah, so that one, obviously, it was a lot of, I had so many emotions. Like, there was so many mixed emotions, because obviously it was live on TV, come on, just 1 second. Because when they scored, I didn't even expect to come on anymore. So when they scored, and then he told me, are you ready? I didn't even do a one. I just came on. So for me, it was just, there were so many emotions in that moment that I didn't even know how to react, because I scored. I wanted to run, but I didn't. I was like all over the place. I just basically had a freeze. So that's why it looks like he's happy, but he's not happy. He's this, he's disappointed, he's frustrated, because there were so many emotions in me at that time that I didn't even know how to react. And I know that if I scored, let's say the game went on a little bit and it was like later on, let's say 3 minutes, I played a bit, the reaction would have been different. But the way it went, everything went so quick, as you saw, like I came on and the goal came and it was like so many emotions. Obviously, you're frustrated. Like, I felt like I should have been playing. But then you also, a great goal, live on TV. And we all know the news about Wrexham. And at the time, we needed a result as well, because we went on a bad run as well of not winning and getting results. So Wrexham was a great result. So for us, yeah, it was just full of mixed emotions. And that's why I said, like, if it was in front of the South Stand, I know the South Stand would have given me that energy to celebrate for them. But because it was before their fans, I saw our happy fans in the corner, and I saw their sad fans in the corner. So it was like too many things, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great moment. And yeah, you mentioned that. I'd completely forgotten about Tim Ryan. That's terrible of me. I'm pretty good with my research, but I just completely forgot he'd had that period in charge. But David Webb then did come in. I think many York fans felt that he was quite out of his depth. Why do you think it didn't quite work out with him? Because we seemed to go from, I think we were possibly about ninth in the table when John was sacked. And then once David came in, we did seem to kind of plummet down the table. What was your kind of take on it all?
Yeah, to be fair, I don't really want to talk too much about Dave. But yeah, it was just, I assume it just didn't work out. You know, some managers come in and it works, some don't work. And maybe, I don't know, obviously he had no experience as a manager as well. But that's not an excuse, because there's many managers who come in with no experience, managerial experience, but still do the job, and some don't, maybe didn't know the league as well. But yeah, so he came in, it didn't work out. Yeah, I felt, obviously, I don't like anyone getting sacked, because it's a job and it's quite disappointing. But I feel like he was obviously unlucky in the timing as well, because the club was really backing John as well. So the time to come in was not a favourable time as well.
Yeah, what was your own relationship like with him?
Yeah, I didn't really have a relationship with him, to be fair. It wasn't really a great relationship, if I have to be honest, because I felt like the way he treated me in particularly wasn't great. But all fairness, that's why I don't have a bad word to say about him. He seemed like a good person, like with a good heart. He actually wanted to know the people for who they were. But for me personally, we didn't have that. And obviously the things what were said and the things that were done shown as well. So that's why I don't really want to talk to you.
No, no, fair enough. We can move on. And we'll move on to the 2-1 win over Dorking. It was a real vital 3 points, wasn't it? And you got on the score sheet, Ben, as well, and helped the team sort of stay up, really, under Mikey Morton. I presume you had a better relationship, Ben, with Mikey than you did with David.
Yeah, obviously, you could see, like, when David left and Mikey took over, even though they came in together, Mikey played me more, because with David, sometimes I wasn't even involved. So, yeah, obviously, Mikey was playing me more. Mikey was talking more to me as well. And you could see, like, the player I was after Dave left was the player I was before Dave came in. So yeah, me and Mikey had a good relationship, or have, Yeah, because if I message him now, we can have chats. So it's not like a distance thing. So not just a football thing, but yeah, me and Mike had a good relationship. And he's an actual good person as well. Not that Dave is not, but I'm just saying, like, he's an actual good person who cared about York as well. Like, you could see a win really did something to him, and maybe a little bit too much, but a win actually did something to him because he actually loved the club and loved the place because he's from there as well. So I would understand like how it would feel and how doing well means to him.
He got some massive wins, didn't he? Including the sort of 3-1 win at Chesterfield, which I think was a high point. What was it that Mikey did when he came in? How did he kind of resolve that situation, as it were? Because I think many of those fans felt like we were heading back down to National League North at one point. What was it that Mikey did, and how did he turn that situation around from your perspective?
Yeah, I think Mikey was just trying to be clear, so there was clarity for everyone, because I felt like before Mikey took over, there was no clarity, so many uncertainties. And you know, with different characters, a lot of uncertainty creates bad results, clearly. So I think Mikey, even though you might agree or disagree as a player, everyone knew what was going on and everyone knew what's happening. So I think that's the thing that really changed for the team going into the last bit, because that last bit was really like, you might be involved or you might not be involved, but that's how he wants it to be. It's not you know the last second of the last minute before the game and stuff like that. It was just clear. He was going, this, the team wins, this is the team. If the team don't win, you get opportunity, you train hard. So it was like clear for everyone.
Yeah, which is, I guess you probably need when you're in a relegation battle, don't you? If you kind of, everyone's confused and not sure what they're doing, it adds to the uncertainty, doesn't it? Like I said, the team stayed up under Mikey, but you were released. Were you disappointed that you couldn't stay at York City? Because I felt like you had quite a good affinity with the supporters and you kind of looked like you were quite settled in York.
Yeah, obviously I love the supporters as I was doing stuff off the pitch as well, in York as well. So yeah, I love the place, I love the city. Obviously me and the supporters had a good relationship, but as we all say, football is football. You might be beloved by the supporters, but when the ownership, the manager, whoever is in charge or whatever happens, once you're there, they will have you. Even if the club doesn't like you, the other people. But if it's the other way around, it's all about decisions, and people make decisions what they think is best for whatever reason they have in their head. The same way, if I go somewhere and I make a decision, I feel like it's best for me, my family, whoever. And maybe that's what they felt like. So it was a bit disappointing, but obviously I knew that the club was not in a place to even give new contracts, and because there was a lot going on behind the scenes as well.
So
with the ownership and Mickey not even knowing apparently if he was staying or not, so there was a lot going on at the time. So even for me personally, to just look forward, it was like, I think, the best way forward. But I would have loved to stay because the fans were unbelievable. And then, yeah, the people around the club, even in the city, were amazing.
And you mentioned community work as well, and that's how we first met, wasn't it? You came to All Saints School that I work at and came and did a great assembly to our students. And all about your kind of faith and your, you know, how important faith is in life to you. So to just sort of outline on this podcast, where did that kind of life in faith sort of come from? Was it right from early in your life?
Yeah, so obviously growing up as a child, I come from a Christian household. Yeah, my mom and I used to go to church every Sunday and sometimes a prayer nights on Wednesdays. So yeah, growing up, I really grew into faith. But when I came to England, because when I turned like 16, 15, 16, I was a Christian, but not really a firm believer. But then when I came to England, I really, really rekindled that love for God. And I really felt like God really being there for me, because through everything I went to, he really always opened doors for me personally. And that's why I'm always willing to share, obviously, my faith and also my story, like I did in schools in York. I did that in the university as well. Obviously, I did a faith and football at the stadium for the supporters. So obviously it's also just to share encouragement to people, because there's a lot of people, obviously my faith has helped me a lot, but there's also like real life stuff happening in the world that people, I feel like if you're going through stuff and you tell them how you've gone through it, and I'm not saying everything is well now, but I'm just saying like when some people hear your story, they know that there's always light at the end of the tunnel. And for me, faith has really kept me strong throughout all of that. But even if you're a non-believer, there's also a way for you to get through it as well. But yeah, so for me personally, that's how faith has really grown in my life.
And when you sign for kind of other clubs, you've had quite a lot of clubs. Do you, when you're in the dressing room, do you kind of seek out other people and see, you know, are there other footballers that have got a similar path to you and a strong kind of belief in faith?
Yeah, obviously you try to see who's a Christian as well. And I'm good with anyone, to be fair, like non-believers, atheists, whatever you are, because we're all human beings and there's no difference to me than to you. Yeah, but obviously if there's Christians in the team, you can connect with them, maybe pray together, read the Bible together. That's what they want to do. That would be amazing for sure.
And we talked about kind of different clubs, and you moved this summer to Manchester 62, which was, I guess, something different. But then I was sort of looking at your career. You know, you're quite happy to kind of move to different parts of the country or move from England to Scotland or wherever. Was this just, you know, just something different that was on offer? And I was looking, you kind of almost have a chance to play in Europe as well, don't you, with it?
Yeah, so the manager who I went there with was Anthony Limbrick. He was managing in England. So I felt like I just wanted to try something different, go abroad as well, because you don't get many opportunities in life to go and work abroad in general. So I felt like that was a nice experience. And the manager obviously worked in England. So not like you're going into a totally new situation. Obviously, it's a different country, but you know how the manager possibly works and the communication is, because if you go to a different team with a Spanish manager and a full Spanish team, the communication might be different and then you might feel more out of your comfort zone. So for me, it was just, yeah, something different, a new change. And obviously with the Europe opportunities, it felt like if you win the league, that would be amazing, because then you play Champions League qualifications and then who knows where you can end up. Maybe you might end up in a Europa Conference League and then now you're playing against decent opposition, having away games in different countries. So yeah, it was an experience in itself.
And I imagine the weather as well, compared to likes of Inverness where you've played before. In Gibraltar will be a little bit warmer, I would imagine.
Yeah, weather was amazing. Always t-shirt and shorts every day, and then England freezing. Especially Inverness with snow. I felt like from October to like January was snow all the time, and then there it was like always sunny. Maybe in the evenings it could get a bit cold, December times in the evening it could get a bit cold, but most of the days always t-shirt and shorts.
Sounds good to me. Your sort of first half of the season, I know you're on a winter break at the minute, but you scored a hat trick as well and seem to be getting on the score sheet quite regularly. Has it been quite good to sort of play first team football week in week out again?
It is. Obviously when I went there in the beginning, after the first game, I got injured a bit, so it was like a bit catching up. But then when I came back, obviously when you play week in, week out, as I told you, the manager believes in you, you do well. For me personally, if you play week in, week out and the manager believes in you and you score, then obviously there's a flow that you can keep going, scoring and doing well.
And do you keep track on York City? I mean, we mentioned you've played for a lot of clubs. I don't know whether when you sign for another club, you kind of forget your past, or like I say, you seem to have a special connection with York City. Are you still sort of keeping an eye on their results?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I've always kept a track on York, and I saw they have new ownership and I see players coming and going and some of the boys are there. Yeah, I've definitely, especially York is not as long ago as well. York is just a season ago, and I do keep track of them. I keep track of the clubs I've been at, to be fair. And York has a special place, so not just because it's last season, but also because of the people and what I've been able to do in the community and the opportunities I've had to even grow as a person as well. So yeah, I've kept track, and I saw they were a little bit struggling, but I think the last three games they have won all three of them or had a good result, so they're on the positive side of things. So I hope they can keep that positivity going.
Yeah, and I wish you all the best, Manny. Thanks for giving up your time this morning and speaking to us about your time at York City, and you know, I hope you've enjoyed sort of talking about some of those memories, and I wish you all the best in your football career going forward.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me as well, and yeah, it's a pleasure. Even after the first day we met was amazing memories we made. For me personally, speaking to like even people in general was not really something I was doing on a regular basis, so for you to give me the opportunity to do that as well, I'm very grateful and I'm very thankful, and hopefully can make more of these memories happen again in the future. I'm more than willing to be there for the community, for the schools, for everyone in York and even outside of York. So thank you very much for having me here as well. I'm really, really happy to just share a bit about my career and encourage and share.
Top man, thank you.
Big thank you then to Manny Duku for giving up his time. We recorded that whilst he was sort of in between clubs. It was quite a strange situation, really. Manny had sort of told me that he was about to leave his club in Gibraltar, but obviously I wasn't able to kind of reference that during the interview, so we kind of skirted around that. And then obviously since then he's then played for Maidstone in their incredible FA Cup run, playing in the win at Ipswich Town, and then he's now moved on to Wealdstone, who are obviously fighting York City in the kind of relegation battle. So obviously if that had been the case, I would have made a few jokes about him playing for Wealdstone there at York City's expense. But yeah, great to speak to Manny. He's a really lovely guy. Like I mentioned in the interview, he'd come to my workplace, All Saints, and did a great assembly with some students about kind of his life with faith and faith and football, and also gave up his time after the assembly to speak to some of our year 10 and 11 students who were maybe struggling with school at the time, but we York City fans, and gave them some good advice. And you know, really an inspirational guy, and I was delighted to get him on the podcast. And that concludes the end of this series, so thanks everyone for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. It took me a while to kind of get it all together, but I was really keen to kind of do that all the way through the decades, going right back from the 70s all the way to pretty much the present day. So it was a body of work I'm really, really proud of. I'm glad that it kind of all came together, and it's always really nice to read the comments that people have been leaving, and yeah, as ever, it inspires me to do more series. And as long as people keep listening and leaving those comments, I'll endeavour to kind of keep putting some content together. Also, big thank you to James Charters. He's the guy who sort of edits and produces all the episodes, basically makes me sound relatively competent. So thanks again to him for giving up his time to be so fast with the edits and get them back, and like I say, kind of put it all together so it sounds relatively slick. And you know, he does a great job, and really pleased that he does that. He's a volunteer for York Hospital Radio, as am I, as is Paul, who does the kind of intros for us as well. If you want to donate to our charity, it's justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. Massive thank you to the sponsors for this series as well, Nearly Departed app and Tom Ibbett with his scout group. So you know, as ever, these things are really helpful to the charity. Yeah, in terms of going forward, we're probably going to release our kind of in a couple of weeks the live event that we did with Ian Dunn and David McGurk. So if you weren't able to make that, then you'll be able to enjoy that. We're looking at doing another live event in the summer, which might be a joint venture with the Supporters Trust. I'm just kind of putting some final sort of things together with that and some plans in place. But as soon as I get that kind of news, I'll put that out there. As ever, if you're able to leave us a review on iTunes or give us a rating on Spotify, these are really helpful. And then just finally, I just wanted to mention our spin-off podcast, which is called The Crux of It. I don't know if people are aware of this. It's another hospital radio kind of production. It's generally a bit of a roundtable discussion about all things York City, but we've also recently started going to the York City press conferences. So that's Phil Bewers, who's like the head of Hospital Radio Sport. So he's going to be going every week, and when he's giving me the audio, I'm just putting that straight onto the Crux of It feed. So if you wanted to listen to some extra content, obviously there's normally kind of the likes of Radio York and the Evening Press Fair, but Hospital Radio get to ask some questions as well. So if you're interested in that, then please do subscribe to that particular feed. So yeah, thanks again for everything, and hopefully back with more content soon.